you know, in recovery, they call that process, instead of emotional dysregulation, they call it internal unmanageability. And a lot of it was focused on trying to get better with that. And like, that was like, I'm bad at that and I'm broken, or there's something wrong with me that I can't manage my own life. But it actually made that sense because, you know, it was just the way that my brain's developed. Every other day was just like, I'm never good enough. Like, I'll never measure up. Nothing that I do is ever going to be good enough, you know, and I won't know when it is. And, you know, that's difficult. That was difficult for me to want to continue to be better, because, you know, a lot of it was hard. And I found my therapist that I actually work with today. And, you know, one of the first things that really stood out to me was he said that this can actually be a strength. And I was like, really? I just could not believe that. I felt broken. I felt like I'm one of those. It was elating, but also like after that had worn off, I just was confused. I wanted to fix it. Like, I thought it could be fixed, and I did everything in my power to do that. That's why I was so gung-ho to do all the things that he wanted me to do.
Welcome to This Complex Life podcast, Ron.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor to share this space with you.
So tell the listeners a little bit about your podcast and who you are and why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. So my podcast is called Don't Mind Me, I Just Have ADHD, and it's, you know, a bit of a labor of love. Like, it's kind of grown on me. What I originally started it and intended it to be was, you know, a mental health podcast. And I was super excited about that. I made, I actually got this book. It's called Batman and Psychology. And I was like, man, this is so awesome. Like, I can put Batman and have all these actors and stuff on there. And, you know, that book is actually not as like, it's a good book, but I thought it would be like a lot more exciting. It just goes, delves into like, you know, like the therapist level book study of like Batman and like what this is. And, you know, it's interesting, but I really like understood that I needed to be more, because mental health is so broad. And like ADHD is something that I know about and I can specialize in talking about, especially in the workplace. So I wanted to have something that really kind of had to focus on tips and strategies to really help people, you know, like myself, like that I wish was out there and more readily available to, you know, navigate that space, which it often intersects with life. So like a lot of it has to do with the preparation for work, because how we show up for work is like, it has a lot to do with how we prepare before we come to work, or even how we went to sleep. So it was a lot of stuff that I was implementing in my life that I just wanted to kind of share and then get more like educated or professional guest on my podcast. So it's been amazing. Like, I've had a lot of people on there that I never would have met if I didn't start the podcast. And, you know, I'm continuing to grow and learn from it as well.
That's really cool. I have the same feeling as some of these conversations were things I wanted to talk about, and then it became something I could share with people. So I definitely understand that. One of the thing I see for folks when they get diagnosed with ADHD as adults is there's like something clicks, or they have a lot of these aha moments about all these other parts of their life leading up to that, whether it's personal life or work. I mean, is that something that you've experienced or you've seen with the folks that you've been interviewing or talking with?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's been so many like, oh man, that's why I do that. Like, I remember like reading this book. It's like, your ADHD brain is not broken, or I can never remember this book for the life of me. So you can tell I already have ADHD. So the thing with that is like, that book talked about, you know, emotional dysregulation. And one of the things in that book was like comparing each brain, like especially the prefrontal cortex, which is the part that functions around the executive decisions, like planning, getting up, making it to doctor's appointments, different things like that. So that part of the brain has been underdeveloped for most people with ADHD. So what she compared that part of the brain to is like an old butler who's like, hey, you know, if you're trying to remember your keys, like, yeah, you left them over there on the counter, you know, right in front. But it's like that part of the brain doesn't work for us. Like it's more sounds like an angry neighbor yelling over a fence. Like, you idiot. Like, how could you have forgotten your keys? You don't even remember, like, what kind of, like, that's how we remember stuff. And I was like, yeah, like, that makes so much sense because that's, like, that's really how my brain was operating. And a lot of it goes back to, like, that addiction. And, you know, in recovery, they call that process, instead of emotional dysregulation, they call it internal unmanageability. So it was like, wow, like, and a lot of it was focused on trying to get better with that. And like, that was like, I'm bad at that and I'm broken or there's something wrong with me that I can't manage my own life. But it actually made that sense because, you know, it was just the way that my brain's developed and that I'm more sensitive because I'm coming out of that emotional side of the brain. So that made a lot of sense to me at that point.
Wow, that's such a difficult internal dialogue to be living with sometimes. That sort of, yeah. You're not the polite, helpful butler, but the angry neighbor. I mean, that's kind of like living with the bully almost in your brain all the time.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, a lot of my thoughts were like, you idiot, you're just so stupid, or like, how could you have done that again? It was very negative and aggressive. And what really helped was like understanding that my brain was just doing this to protect me. Like, it understood like how I feel when I get things wrong and like how the world had treated me when I, you know, didn't show up or I forgot something and it didn't make any sense why I continue to forget things. You know, it wasn't until like I started understanding that and started giving myself space for forgetting stuff, I would be like, instead of, I began to slowly over time to say, hey, you know, if I forgot something that I normally forget, I'd be like, yeah, that happened. It's okay. I'm surprised it didn't happen more, you know, and instead of, you know, calling myself an idiot. And like, yeah, it comes here and there, but it's like the internal dialogue that I allow myself to talk to myself in, you know, and that came through therapy. That came through like wanting to be better to myself and self-love, which took time because like those thoughts just don't go away even though you see them that way.
Yeah, I love that self-compassion piece. And once you start to understand that that's how you're brain works, you can stop seeing it as somehow broken or not enough.
Yeah, definitely.
You kind of, I mean, you refer to an ADHD brain as a maybe like a different operating system. And I love that because sometimes that's what I use with clients where I'm like, it's like being a PC in a Mac world where everything is Apple and you're just on Windows and there's just these communication glitches or some things just don't work the same way. How did defining it that way shift your perspective or help you understand your own, I guess, operating system?
Yeah, it was, and I like that Apple and Mac, no, the Apple and PC, you know, Windows still works, like, and it works great. And I'm more of like a Windows guy, so it kind of makes sense that that correlation. But, you know, it came from this idea that it was like we're just wired different, you know, and it's kind of hard to imagine that just because we can't really see the brain and it's all the connections that go on. But like once I started like really developing that and understanding, like I said, understanding like parts of the brain just weren't developed right, or, you know, it was a chemical imbalance, you know, it's like this interface. So our interface doesn't really work a lot with how the world is designed. And I feel like most people don't anyways, especially for us, like when it comes to like learning stuff. And I had to really, you know, because it would take me a long time to get certain things. And I would feel like I'm just slow or dumb. Like when it was actually like, there was a lot of things that I did get and I was really good at. And especially like art and being able to write. And like, you know, I am like kind of a rapper. So like, you know, that takes a certain amount of intelligence and talent, you know, to be able to put words together and see that way. So I started looking at it more of like, since it did take me a while and I would normally have to like learn, my learning style was different. Or is it more like I can read something, but I have to write it down and like reread it in order to like really get it. So I looked like really compared it to a high definition printer. It takes longer, but the images are so much like, there's so much more definition when it comes to those images. And it's not that it's a better like image per se, but it's just got more, it's more in depth and it has a different perspective about how that same image looks. And that helped me to, you know, to really take myself and be okay with that type of learning process. And that it's actually like, I like that, you know, once I get all the pieces together, it's like, I can see it and it's just starts to just come together in such a crazy way.
Yeah, I love that. It's a very interesting example, because if we think about evolution, the brain, this would have had to have served a function to still exist. It would have to have been to serve us somehow. And so for some people to think that way, to piece things together differently, to see different details is a valuable skill set. But sometimes the environment doesn't allow for it or value it or is conducive to it. Like there's something in the environment. It's that social model of disability that's the impact.
Yeah, definitely. And I love how you put it, the environment. It's always the environment. Like, you know, you put us, it depends on the environment you put us in. Like it's just like an octopus. You know, if you put it in the water, it's great. It's amazing. But you take it out and it's going to struggle. Like you put us in like a classroom with watching videos and like, or even just listening to a teacher rattle on about something that we're not even interested in, that's not even going to help us. And you don't even tell us really why. And we have to sit there for 8 hours. Like that's terrible, especially if your mind's going 1,000 miles an hour. You're a kid, you're creative, you're told to stifle that. Like it's an amazing suppression of talent, of potential, you know, and these system is just, you know, not all systems are that way, but the majority of them do not really foster that potential and cultivating people to really explore who they are and challenge the system and to make it better, you know, for everyone.
When I mean, I say this in teenagers as well as adults, but I think adults have had a longer exposure to this. So a lot of the adults that I work with who have ADHD or are ADHDers have a long history of being told, like, you're lazy, just try harder, stop being so, you know, whatever. Did you have those messages growing up?
You know, I really didn't think that, you know, maybe it was a little bit in there, but I think that the major message that, you know, really resonated with me was, you know, my dad's just lack of approval. That struck, you know, because I remember, you know, my mom, she was telling me that, you know, she saw me always try my best to like win my dad's approval and try to make him proud. And it always fell short. And I can remember that. It was like all I wanted to hear from my dad was that he was proud of me. And I've got that like, you know, a couple times growing up. And one of them was when I graduated high school. You know, I was like, he gave me a hug, which was rare. And he said he was proud of me because I was the only one in his family to ever graduate from high school. And that meant everything that day. But it was just like every other day was just like, I'm never good enough. Like, I'll never measure up. Nothing that I do is ever going to be good enough, you know, and I won't know when it is. And, you know, that's difficult. That was difficult for me to want to continue to be better, because, you know, a lot of it was hard. A lot of it with school was incredibly difficult. I had a tough time making friends. I often spent a lot of time, you know, I can remember a lot of times where I would spend time hiding out in the bathroom at school and just thinking I'm such a loser. It was definitely difficult for me. And, you know, growing up, like, I just adopted this idea of, like, I don't want to be cool. Like, I'm cool being a dork. Like, I don't need this social, like, I don't need to be around people. I don't need that. So it really started developing this toxic, you know, coping mechanism that continued to become, like, attract the wrong people. And I ended up getting into bad romantic relationships, you know, where I was very toxic in those relationships to, you know, because all I knew was, like, to shut down when things got emotional. I didn't know how to deal with them because, like, that's all I knew from my dad. And I knew, like, because I got hurt, like, I wasn't supposed to show emotions. I was never supposed to admit that I got jealous. You know, all that stuff would get pushed down when in actuality it was going on. And I had no way to communicate or do anything about that but use drugs. And I numbed out for so many years with that. You know, so it was, you know, that's definitely a good question that you asked.
How did you turn that around or evolve, adjust? Like, what changed? How did it change to start navigating all of those things, look at workplaces, relationships, understanding yourself? Like, there's actually so much has happened since.
Yeah, definitely. It was a long time. It's this stuff doesn't happen overnight. It's a lot of hard work. But I, of course, when I started doing the work, so what really helped me to realize that I needed help was becoming homeless for, like, the second time in my life. And, you know, waking up on the Washington Mall in D.C., the National Mall, and just, like, you know, and I had a job. And I was like, this isn't fun anymore. This isn't the way I want to live my life. I need help. So I decided to, you know, ask my mom, you know, because they had done, like, one of those interventions and begged me to go into treatment, but I wasn't ready at that time. And, you know, so I was like, is that still on the table? And I ended up going into this Salvation Army program, which is, like, it's a work therapy program. And ended up going in there for, like, 23 days. I ended up getting kicked out of that because I got into a fight with this guy. But I didn't really initiate. I mean, I guess I initiated it because, like, I walked by him while we were working out on weights. And it was out in Baltimore. And he ended up tapping me on the shoulder and punching me in the face. You know, but I didn't retaliate. I just was, like, laughing. So I ended up telling one of the supervisors or whatever that was there, and, like, you know, they had a no fighting policy, so I ended up getting kicked out. So I was really upset with that because, like, I started developing, like, relationships in there, but, you know, at the same time I had cellulitis, so it was, I just thought it was a rash, and if I didn't get kicked out, I might not have be alive today. So, you know, my mom, who wasn't even allowing me at her house, came and got me, allowed me to stay in there. And I was like, yeah, I want to go to that original place, that treatment center that you guys talked about. Do you think that that could happen? So we did all the work. I went into that treatment center and, you know, I was just scared for my life, you know, because, like, I had, like, used in between there. And I'm glad that that happened because, like, it was literally, like, the last time, and I didn't even enjoy it. Like, it was terrible because, like, all the trust that I had built up was just gone. And I felt so bad. It just, I didn't enjoy it the way that I used to. And I knew, And I was, that's what I'm saying. I'm happy that I had that experience because, like, I know what it's like to go back. And, like, I don't want to lose any of that stuff. Like, I love the relationships that I built. And going through that process of recovery has taught me so much about, like, foundation, about, like, that I, about humility. Like, I still have a lot to learn. And, you know, the other part of humility, which I'm beginning to learn more, is like that I do know a lot, that I do have a lot of experience that I can pass on, you know. So it's not being completely modest, but it's in that state, like, hey, look, this is where I'm at. Like, I'm not an expert, I never will be, but I can always continue to grow. And so throughout that process of, like, acceptance, you know, learning acceptance of who I am on a deeper level, like, I was able to finally, like, understand that I have ADHD, because I was, like, about to get fired because I was hurting myself, damaging company property, and, like, taken into the office, and they were like, if this happens one more time, you're going to get walked out. So I was desperate. So I went to see my general practitioner and was like, yeah, look, I'm about to get fired. Like, I can't slow down. I need help. What can we do about this? And she kind of didn't really have an answer. So I was like, maybe I have ADHD. And she didn't seem, like, too convinced about that, but she gave me a list of therapists and psychologists. So I went down that and I found my therapist that I actually work with today. And, you know, one of the first things that really stood out to me was he said that this can actually be a strength. And I was like, really? I just could not believe that. I felt broken. I felt like I'm one of those. It was elating, but also, like, after that had worn off, I just was confused. I wanted to fix it. Like, I thought it could be fixed, and I did everything in my power to do that. That's why I was so gung-ho to do all the things that he wanted me to do. But I ended up almost getting fired again. And that's when really the acceptance, like, started to, like, I started to really understand what acceptance was, like, on a deep level, accepting that I'm an addict and accepting that I have ADHD, and that's not going to change. So I stopped trying to fight or fix these things or think I'm better than that. I just started to try to understand, well, how can I work with it? How can I try to understand this? You know, because, like, all the information that I tried to find, it was like digging for gold. It was hard. It was scattered all over the place. But when I did find it, it was like, yeah, there is stuff out there that explains this on a deeper level. And I believe it's all out there and it's scattered for a reason. So it was like throughout that process of understanding, and, you know, I just found so many amazing tools. But I feel like the biggest one is the mindset, is like understanding that there's nothing really wrong with me. I've just got to understand who I am and what my boundaries are.
Yeah. I mean, it's such an incredible story. There'd be so much we could talk about there. Maybe as a sort of last question to wrap up is, what would you tell your younger self about living with ADHD if you could go back in time?
Yeah, that's a good one. I would definitely, you know, tell me it's okay. It's okay to be who you are. That it, you know, life is hard for everybody. And you're not alone in this. If you need to feel sad, feel sad. If you feel depressed, don't be afraid to talk about it. Find the right people. And that's going to be the most important thing for you moving forward, is just be okay. You know, and I'd probably just sit with him while, you know, and hopefully, you know, while he cried or got angry or whatever. Because I honestly, like, I try to sit with my inner child. So I'm constantly, you know, a lot talking with the inner child that's still dealing with that trauma, that's still processing those emotions, and they come up. Sometimes they make sense, and sometimes, a lot of times they don't, but they got to come out. And, you know, giving myself the space to do that has been one of the biggest sources of strength and relief, because, like, it doesn't matter when they show up, I've got the tools. You know, and I'm not trying to run away from them anymore. I'm like, okay, this is a chance to get better with that.
I love that. I love the sitting with it and holding space instead of trying to fix it. I think that's a really compassionate thing that maybe your younger self really needed, for someone to actually listen and be there, not try to fix it or kind of tell you what to do.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, it's all what we all need is just, you know, a lot of the trauma that comes in the world is like, I understand through my own trauma is like, it just came from a place that I needed some, you know, like what Dr. Gabor Mate calls attunement, you know, and that's just compassionate sitting, like I said, and physical, you know, assurance that things are going to be okay, that somebody's here for you no matter, like, and not trying to, and maybe, you know, giving you the tools to get better with it, giving you the hope that it's okay.
So if people want to find out a bit more about you, where can they go? And I'll put links to all of these in the show notes. So we have your podcast. Don't mind me. I just have ADHD. You also have a book I saw. Is it a book or downloadable? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can also find me at the Batcave too. I'm just kidding. So yeah, let me see. I think I got the book up here. It's the Self-Discovery Journal. And it's got a bunch of prompts for those who appreciate power tool tools. I've curated an online ebook version of this. So I'm giving that as a complimentary resource that you can access, and you can find that at youradhdguy.com. It's not just a journal, but a mirror, a way to clarify your vision, reset your compass, and reconnect with who you truly are. And for those individuals who refuse to settle for surface level change and are ready to go deep, I offer my assessment, pro-social assessment call. So that's just a way to see if we fit together, you know, just kind of find out where you're at on your journey, and to see if, you know, like, I'm a good fit for you. Because what I want to do is be able to help people in their journey get to where I got, you know, in your own way, because it takes special one-on-one coaching to do that. And if that's something that you really look, you're tired of living the life that you want and you're ready to make that change, definitely check that out at youradhdguy.com.
Fantastic. So I'll pop links to all of those in the show notes, and people can tune in to the next episode where we swap sides and I'm in the hot seat and we have another conversation about ADHD, but from a therapy point of view. So thanks so much for joining me on this part one episode.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening. To keep the conversation going, head on over to Instagram or LinkedIn and follow me. If you'd like to keep updated with episodes and other interesting things happening in mental health, join my weekly This Complex Life newsletter, where I'll share tools, tips, and insight. There's a link in the show notes. Got a question you want answered? Shoot me an email or a DM. I'd love to hear from you. And if you enjoy the show, I'd really appreciate it if you could leave a rating and a review. It helps other people find the podcast.